This is the Inland Journal from Spokane Public Radio. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Dr. David Taubin came to Spokane last week to talk about what he terms as the opioid epidemic. Dr. Taubin is the chief of pain medicine at the University of Washington School of Medicine. Opioids are those drugs prescribed by doctors to cover up pain. Millions have become addicted to them. Hundreds of thousands of Americans have died from opioid overdoses. Dr. Taubin says there are better ways to treat pain, but opioids have been the easy treatment for doctors and insurance companies. That, he says, is changing. Not only have opioids caused so much pain for families, he says they're also creating a major shift in the way doctors treat patients in pain. And we'll get to all of those things during the next several minutes. Dr. Taubin is on the phone with us now. Most of the stories we hear about these, the worst of the epidemic, are in places like Huntington, West Virginia, and small towns in Ohio, and Terre Haute, Indiana, and a lot of these Rust Belt places. Are there places in rural Washington, rural Idaho, rural Oregon that sort of, you know, rise to that level?
So actually, Spokane and Whitman County and Stevens County out here, they're about the same as King County in terms of the overdose death rates that are occurring. You know, Lincoln and Columbia are similar to the West Virginia and the Ohio rural areas. Ferry, Pendray, about in the middle. And interestingly, Adams and Franklin, just going over a map recently, are the state prize winners at having low opiate overdose rates. So there's some winners here, just like there is in the western part of the state. And it distributes to generally the least resourced, the most socioeconomically distressed populations.
I wanted to ask you about the effect on the prescription habits, not only of the new doctors that we're training, but also on doctors like you who have been around a little while. Is there sort of a sea change for physicians when it comes to how do we treat pain in this?
Absolutely. I'd say it's like it's a Scylla and Charybdis sea change, steering between two poles, one of which is the undertreatment of pain, which we confronted really in the late 80s and early 90s. And now the overtreatment with opioids, but yet still the undertreatment of pain, because pain is best treated without opioids. In fact, it's best treated without any of the pharmaceuticals that we use for them. It's way more complicated than a pill can solve because it involves the social environment that our patients live in, home, work, economic, community, and it involves their psychological state, which is shaped beginning at early childhood in terms of potentially living in a high-stress home life, abandonment, abuse, neglect, physical violence, sexual abuse, all these awful things, and that changes the way the brain behaves. Practices are changing, and the systems of care have to change. Us old-timers and even middle-career folks lived through an era when it was encouraged. In fact, people were disciplined if they didn't take care of pain, using as many opioids as it required. So there is a giant paradigm shift, and unfortunately, the people getting hit by this swinging pendulum are our patients and providers who are saying, I don't want any part of this business. I'm just not going to take care of pain. Too tricky, too much of a problem, and it's produced, actually, I think, an ethical conundrum. We had someone from the area who made some calls to a bunch of clinics, and she reported, this is non-scientific, that 40% of the clinics, when she said, oh, I need to find a new doctor, what's your problem? I have a chronic pain problem. And 40% of the clinics said, we don't take care of chronic pain. And she said, where can I go? And she said, well, you just have to call another clinic. And that's an abomination to the spirit of medicine.
So do doctors feel under siege? Because after all, they've been doing what they were trained to do. They thought they had these great, you know, tools, and we find out that the tools aren't as great as we thought they were. Is that leading to a moral and ethical dilemma within your, you know, the profession of we don't know what to do anymore?
I like the word. I may quote you. It is a siege. It's a siege for a bunch of reasons, and this is the system problem. So one of the system problems early on was the the fact that you couldn't find anyone who could deliver the social and psychological therapies and the physical rehabilitation, because insurance companies weren't willing to pay for it. They wanted quick outcomes. Back in my earlier career days, a month's worth of OxyContin, the cost, would cover an entire clinical treatment protocol for cognitive behavioral therapy, which has proven evidence of benefit, and it's durable. So instead, drug company said, oh, we'll just pay for the OxyContins. Meanwhile, Purdue was promoting OxyContin, $200 million a year in marketing, and they generated in this interval $35 billion between 1996 and 2007. And in 2007, they had a settlement for false marketing, and it cost them $630+ million in fines. So that's a 55 times return on investment. What a great deal. And now they're being sued by every state in the country. Spokane County just jumped in the suit, and it's going to be similar to the tobacco settlement.
Dr. David Taubman teaches medical students at the University of Washington. He says they're learning more about pain and how to treat it than most veteran physicians received.
I received exactly 0 hours of pain education when I was a medical student. That was back in the 70s. In the early 2000s, it was average across this country 7 hours. That sounds like a lot, but that's over 4 years. And when you look at those curriculum, it was mostly about addiction and opioids. It wasn't about treating pain correctly. So big changes are occurring in that. UW and our Gonzaga students are now getting up to 26 hours. National leaders. Because we have to train the incoming workforce. The other problem is the poor primary care doc in the clinic got about 15 minutes. Half the visit you spend doing the required preventative medicine stuff. The other half the visit you navigate the 7 other chronic conditions the patient's talking about. The other half the visit you see it's going to come up to longer than a visit. And in fact, they have no time at all on the treadmill of production that's expected. So they are untrained, overwhelmed with a workload that they cannot manage, no resources to send the patients to, no organized policies. They were confused by experts who kept telling them, yeah, just give more opioids. Now they're trying to dig out. So the first thing they're doing is they're stopping digging. Some are bailing out, but the clinicians who we strive to have, and I certainly hope we're creating in the workforce, and the senior, mid and late career physicians that I meet across the state, they're folks who really want to do the right thing. They're carrying a load and working with what we call these legacy folks, people that have been on high doses. They're not addicts. They've just been doing what they've been told, and now their carpet's being pulled out from under them. This is the sea change, the siege, as you described, that they feel. And some are just refusing to take care of these patients, and that can't be done. So we need to give them the tools to do it. We need to give them the training to accomplish it, and we need to give them the resources to the patients so they can afford the more complicated, ultimately far less expensive, but services that are frequently not covered by any insurer.
Dr. David Taubman is the chief of pain medicine for the University of Washington School of Medicine. He spoke last week in Spokane.